The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're going to start the week trending some of the other stories making the news this week. We're joined by Claire Grady, former editor of the Irish Independent, and Carl Dieter from mortgagebrokers.ie. And Claire, I'd like you to start, please, with a story that is breaking today in relation to a woman who has settled a high court action against the Lewis operators for over €500,000 after she was injured as a teenager doing a thing called tram surfing. Tell us about this piece, Claire.
Yeah, it's a new one on me. Rebecca Kelly was 13 at the time of the incident, and apparently there was a phenomenon at the time of youngsters tram surfing, which was basically they'd, as the doors closed on the tram, there's a little lip, a little step at the, you know, at foot level, and as the tram would be pulling out, youngsters would climb onto that and hold on for dear life as the tram pulled off. And I mean, it's like for years, you know, youngsters are scutting on the backs of lorries and stuff like that. But this happened on an evening in 2010, and this girl, who was 13 at the time, as I say, fell off and had a head injury, had to be pulled by her friends off the track before she was hit by another tram. So it's taken till now, obviously, 7 years on. She got a brain injury, a severe brain injury at the time. Now, there wasn't much more detail about the injury given in court. There's a picture of her on some of the websites today. So she was in court herself. So she did admit that, obviously, you know, that she had behaved, you know, there was a contributory behaviour on her part. The tram company, or the Lewis company that runs, the company that runs Lewis, they contested the actual action, but it was eventually settled for €500,000. Now, I should say here that since 2010, the Lewis company have taken steps to make it impossible or near impossible to hold on to a tram. So this practice doesn't go on anymore, apparently.
What do you make of this, Carl Dieter? Because that would imply that, yes, there was something that the Lewis operator could do and did subsequent to this particular injury. But still, if somebody does something like that, even as a teenage girl, should they be getting €550,000 in damages?
Well, she got a very big financial award. The award I would have given her would be a thing called a Darwin Award, which goes out to all the people who do the silliest things that you can think of. It's pretty amazing that the Lewis didn't actually win this one on the idea of contributory negligence. You see, if I go climbing a tree and then I fall out of the tree, as you might, and hurt myself, is it the owner of the tree's fault or is it mine? Did I do something which added to that? Did anyone ever say, ride a Lewis on the outside? I don't believe that anyone has ever suggested that anybody do that, except for young people who are acting usually in an antisocial way, and then sometimes bad things happen, and then everyone else has to pay them €500,000 for it. I think that's a mistake. She should have been told, and I'm sorry that she got injured. I'm obviously not happy about that, but she seems to be a fairly well-adjusted young woman. She's gone on to have a normal life. She has a child. So, I mean, I don't know that her life has been destroyed. Giving her €500,000, I think, sends out the wrong message that you can go and do anything, no matter how moronic it is, and still be compensated for it.
And Claire, I think it should be clarified here that my understanding of this is that this was a settlement that was approved by the judge. This wasn't an award of the court. This would appear to be Lewis,
yes,
fearing the financial costs involved of a trial and a possibly even a bigger award been made, decided to cut their losses and pay this €550,000.
I imagine that was a huge element on it. The other significant thing that came out in court today was that there had been 54 recorded incidents of tram surfing between 2005 and 2010. Now, as you know, if there's 54 incidents of it, it is a problem for the tram company, and I imagine it could have been said then, if you knew this was a problem, if you knew this was happening, why didn't you take measures? Why didn't you do things to make it, you know, to stop kids being able to get on the tram in that way? And since then, they have introduced some sort of a metal bar which clears the space between the door and the body of the tram so that there is nothing to hang on to. So that in itself suggests that there was some bit of a flaw there that allowed this to happen. I mean, it is. I mean, up to a point, I agree with Carl. But if there's a practice going on, you know, with youngsters, and if the organisation or the company knows about it, it does actually put an obligation on them. I mean, kids do these sort of mad things, and there would seem to be an obligation on them to take steps to reduce the likelihood of this happening.
Well, okay, the message there is clear then. Dublin City Council, watch out, because every time the sun shines, kids are jumping off bridges into the Liffey.
That is true.
Carl, a story I want to concentrate with you on, and this caused an enormous amount of controversy and upset during the week. We didn't have a chance to talk about it on The Last Word earlier this week, but this is the case of a man who hit his wife twice across the head after dragging her upstairs, removed her jeans by force. He was demanding sex from her. They were separated. They were a married couple who were separated. And indeed, she had obtained a protection order against him in the weeks leading up to the assault. So he was convicted of the assault. Tell us about the sentence he received.
2 years fully suspended. So the Irish judiciary, yet again, giving us confidence, they put the bad people away when they need to. I don't know why we feel some need to give any kind of leniency to a person who acts like a caveman. Obviously, hitting people in the head, pulling off their clothes, demanding sex is completely disgusting behaviour. And as you said, there was actually a protection order against him. He shouldn't have been there to begin with. And he broke that too. So in a case like this, I'm not a believer that an antisocial behaviour such as this, where that rehabilitation of it is a given, that by setting the person free, they're magically going to change their ways. I actually feel the need for custodial sentences in cases like this. I need to hear that every now and then. I'm so sick of hearing about people with 80, 90 convictions. And of course, then there's other famous cases like the one a few weeks ago where a person with 90 convictions nearly killed a young mother of four. Like, where's the thought for the victims in all of this? I just find this really, really hard to swallow. Maybe there's details that the paper doesn't have, and obviously that's always a case. But on the face of it, with the facts that are given, breaking a protection order, assaulting a person, then after it, ripping off their clothes, demanding sex, to me, that has all the hallmarks that make up into a very serious crime. That person shouldn't be walking around the streets.
Judge Patricia Ryan, in sentencing him to the 2 years fully suspended, said the incident took place shortly after a marriage breakup when, quote, feelings were running high. Let's move on. And Claire, a story from England, and this is an interesting one. Anjem Chowdhury is a man who I think is known here in Ireland as well, radical Islamist preacher who had been jailed for inviting support for ISIS. He has been released from prison in England a little after 2 years after his conviction. Why so? Why is he out now?
It's really not quite clear. He was sentenced to 5.5 years for inciting people and for inviting people to support ISIS. He's accredited with being directly responsible for recruiting into extremism several of the people who are involved in various terrorist attacks in Britain. So it's not something that had no consequence. He's been involved in a long campaign over a number of years for extremism, extreme Islamism, and particularly ISIS. So 5.5 years into his sentence, it is not really quite clear. They're still to come out. The government in Britain, or the services there, have to come out and say why they're exactly releasing him, 2.5 years early. Now, he is in a probation house. He's going to be monitored. He'll have restricted access to the internet and all of these sort of things. But obviously, there is beginning to be today in Britain huge anger about him being let out so early.
What do you make of this, Carl?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of outrage when you hear, for instance, hate speech. And this guy obviously has no issue with hate speech. Now, the things he says don't really bother me because I just think he's crazy. But when you have someone who is promoting ideology that actually results in real flesh and blood people being killed in other parts of the world and in saying, please do sign up, go away, be radicalized and go do horrific things to other people, is that person better off on the streets or off them? I don't know. But what I would say and what I think they should do in the UK, although it's probably not on the cards, is say, look, you obviously seem very happy with everything to do with ISIS. So you're leaving. We're going to send you off and you can go live there. Go live in the caliphate. Goodbye.
Let's have some of your comments on the first item, and that girl, 13 at the time, now 20, who has received a settlement of over €500,000 from the Lewis company, despite the fact that she was the one who undertook the tram surfing, which caused her own accident in which she injured her head. One says from Brian, this is nuts. Why do injured people think they're entitled to a windfall? Another one, this is so ridiculous. That girl who was train surfing and suing, getting the money. Lewis should have sued her for the messing. Stefan says, this is the reason why insurance here in Ireland is so expensive. No personal responsibility. They deserve an ass whooping by their parents. And everyone, so if I go and put myself and others in danger, can I get €500,000 for it? This is crazy. And this reward is an award for stupidity. That was her decision to do it. How many more of these cases will it encourage? I despair. But Paul says, we all did stupid things as teenagers. It's the nature of the beast. At 13, we think we are indestructible. On yesterday's programme, we spoke to Maeve Tierney, who is the principal of St. Cronan's National School in Bray, about a little 9-year-old boy that they have in the school, Eric G. Yingzhu, who is on the verge of being deported because he does not have Irish citizenship. He was born in Ireland. He's never left the country. He has nowhere to go, really, but his mother is here illegally. And because of a constitutional referendum that we had in 2004, despite the fact that he is born here in Ireland, he is not entitled to remain. Claire, that constitutional referendum did give the government an out, and that legislation could be introduced to look after people like Eric. But of course, once the constitutional referendum came in, nothing was done about legislation.
I mean, it's so typical, isn't it? I mean, I remember at the time in 2004, one of the big issues, one of the big narratives was that there was people, pregnant women coming from different countries and, you know, being kind of doing whatever they had to do to get into Ireland so that their baby could be born here, and it meant the baby would have Irish citizenship and they'd be allowed to stay. And this was this sort of panic sort of at the time. So you're absolutely right, Matt. What could have been done after that then, the referendum, that particular thing was passed, and what could have been done then was a provision made. And it's the sort of thing that, we've heard a lot about in America, of course, this year. I mean, Barack Obama and 2012 brought in the Dreamers legislation, or DACA was a variation of the Dreamers legislation, which allowed for, you know, especially young children who had been brought into the country, or like who'd been born here but their parents weren't legal, or they didn't have their documentation, to make provision for children like that to be given rights of access, rights of education, rights to stay, and in the fullness of time to get citizenship. And it looks like that's what's going to have to happen here now. We had the case of the young, the 14-year-old in Tullamore there only a few weeks ago. Now, he wasn't born here. He came here as a 2-year-old, but he'd been here for 12 years. And there was he was close to being deported along with his family. And, you know, a big campaign, very well-run campaign by school children in Tullamore. But it shouldn't have to be dependent on school children running campaigns like that and doing this on a case-by-case basis for this to be sorted out.
Of course, they at least looked after their own friends, whereas back in 2004, I think it was an overwhelming majority, Carl, who decided that somehow the maternity hospitals were full of women flying in to have children in Ireland so that they could get EU citizenship. Given the way the Irish people have depended on emigration over the years, what do you make of our attitude at times towards immigrants?
I permanently laugh about it because I'm not from here. I'm one of the people that was born elsewhere. I came here when I was nearly 11. Now, I've been back and forth to the US a lot, which is my home. And I always marvel that we live in a country where our biggest export for about 100 years was people. And then when other places want to export their people so they can have a better life, we start looking down our nose and saying no. Now, in this instance, the child was born 5 years after that rule came in. So I don't believe that there was ever any doubt that what was happening was not the way it should be. But if you're going to start talking about deporting people, we've plenty of adults who we should be getting rid of well before we get rid of a child who is an innocent victim and all this. I signed that petition earlier in the week. I saw an economist from UCD, Declan Jordan, writing about it. And I think it was 9,000 signatures at the time. Now it's up to 40,000. Well, that's a significant part of the population. That's almost 1% of the population in this country have actually said that they would rather see a society where we keep this child here. And I think that when 1% of the population is saying that, it probably echoes a lot more of the people out there who would rather see a child who is victimless in all of this and who clearly won't be given opportunity in China should they return, stay here where they're at home, where they are loved and wanted and part of society.
And I do think some proper provision should be made, though, Matt, because here's a child who is integrated into his school. He's got a lot of friends and obviously a lot of articulate friends and adults looking out for him. And the same with the young guy in Tullamore. What about the children who aren't as well integrated, who maybe don't have as many friends, who don't have people to kind of start these petitions going? Provision has to be made for them, too. It can't just be about if you get the most signatures, we can persuade the politicians to allow you to stay. Provision has to be made for the people who aren't as well integrated because they're escaping trauma or they've some other reason why they haven't quite settled in quite as well. And they shouldn't be discriminated against because they don't have a community that'll rally behind them.
Okay, let's move on, Carl. Apparently one of the most popular tissue brands, the Kleenex Man Size, is no more. Tell us why.
They thought that they were offending people's better sense when it came to issues of gender, that it was a potentially harmful gender stereotype. I have to say, I think that the politically correct authoritarians have reached a new low in sending out this message, because last time I checked, the Kleenex doesn't say much about anything. I certainly don't judge the value of any gender based on what a box of tissues says. So,
okay, come on. Man size has been changed to extra large. I mean, there are men who are smaller than some women.
That's a great story, Matt. I don't care. I'm saying it's a tissue. Like, I take my cultural cues from objective reality, not from a box of Kleenex.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of understand a little bit why people are challenging the way we use language. I mean, I remember in South Africa about 20 years ago, I was in a restaurant and they had on the menu a thing called a lady's steak. And I thought, what on earth? So we had to ask what the lady's steak was. And what it was a smaller portion of steak. No, it was less expensive, of course. So we just thought it was hilarious to go to another culture and find them using terminology like that, a lady's steak. And I suppose it's like the whole idea of it being a man-sized tissue had kind of gone over my head. I hadn't ever thought of it as part of the gender wars or anything like that. My issue wouldn't be with things being called a man-sized tissue. My issue would be with products that are, they're slightly different for men than for women, but women get charged more. And there's a lot of kind of products like shaving creams, all sorts of things like that, shaving razors and stuff like that. And the women's version, because I don't know whether it's because they're pink or shiny or something like that, they always seem to charge more and they always seem to be able to charge more.
Is there any practical difference? Is there any difference in the shaving foam or in the actual razor?
I can't say I've tried both, Matt, but I think
why wouldn't you try the men's shaving cream and the men's razors to save money?
I tried the women's shaving foam and I found my cheeks were silky and smooth for long after.
You see, okay, so maybe it does work better.
Yeah, we should rename everything. A manhole will now be called a person hole. Manslaughter, person slaughter. Yeah, like, this is a thing. There's certain things that, like, if you're going to get upset about it, chances are you need to get on with your life and find things worth being upset about. I still can't believe a box of tissues offends anyone.
We started this half hour by talking about an award and a case today in the courts. Well, actually, a settlement, as we said. We're going to finish with looking at an Employment Appeals Tribunal decision to give a man €29,000 for a wrongful dismissal after he had taken a discarded copy of Time magazine from a rubbish bag at Shannon Airport. Claire, what happened here?
Right, this man was employed by an airline security company. So that's very significant because the company had a zero tolerance policy about what they would call theft or alleged theft.
Theft? So, wasn't this actually environmentally friendly to take a magazine from a rubbish bag rather than letting it go to waste?
They didn't see it that way. Now, they were saying that he didn't ask, and he admits he didn't ask anybody for permission. The cleaners had removed it from the airline. The security company. The security company emphasised that they had circulated a memo sometime earlier about another employee was sacked for stealing a can of Coke from the actual airline itself. Now, there is a substantial difference between stealing a can of Coke that's actually on the plane and something that's been discarded. And the Employment Appeals Tribunal actually took the same view. And that's why he was awarded €29,000.
Brief last word on this from you, Carl Dieter.
Yeah, I think if you're going to steal a magazine, you should at least try to get one like Viz that might be a bit of fun. Time magazine is what I read when I need to go to sleep. So well done on getting sacked over that one. But justice was served.
Carl Dieter and Claire Grady, thank you both very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM, coming from Tralee today.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.